Then secondly, we'll deal with the SAQA annual report, South African Qualification Authority annual report. Then lastly, Council on Higher Education annual report. So literally looking at three reports, and I'm hoping that within the time frame that we've been allocated until half past 12, we'll be able to deal with. Just to apologize with starting late, I'm from another meeting, and Honorable Fransman is actually also coming from another meeting, so he'll join us later. But he will be joining this meeting, he's available for this meeting. Without any waste of time, honorable members and colleagues, just to firstly welcome the team from NSFAS, the team from SAQA, and the team from Council of Higher Education. And I would like to start with NSFAS with the presentation, and then request perhaps that we start with the introductions of the team that is here today that will be interacting with the portfolio committee. Over to you, sir.
Morning, Chairperson. Thank you very much for the opportunity. My name is Ashley Seymour. I'm the Chief Executive Officer of the NSFAS. On my left is Fiona Lewis, the Research and Policy Officer. On her left is Ms. Merle Festers, the Chief Financial Officer, and on her left is Ms. Bonnie Feldman, who is our Communications and Outreach Officer. Chairperson, if I could start with our presentation. Again, certainly appreciation for the opportunity to present our annual report.
Is the Chairperson of the Board not here?
I should have said that he sent his apologies regrettably, Chairperson. Moving quite ahead. Chairperson, we are presenting our results for the 31st of March 2010. We are submitting on the basis of the understanding that it is a strong balance sheet that does incorporate a fairly conservative impairment and provision for doubtful debts. We just outlined that what we refer to as an impairment, Chairperson, is really an adjustment to the value of the loans that essentially reflects the recoverability as management's estimates and judgment. Chairperson also reflects continued fairly strong growth in bursary awards over the reporting period. As the Chairperson and the members would have seen, we have received an adverse disclaimed opinion for the last financial year, and I thought I'd just spend a bit of time with that, Chair. We do make the point that it largely is as a result of technical financial reporting issues, and we will unpack that, Chairperson. We have the view that the factors that certainly have contributed to this disclaimer of opinion, as we mentioned, technical financial reporting requirements, limitations in our data management system and processes, Chair, limited financial skills and capacity within the organization. The board, together with management, Chair, has taken the matter quite seriously and have therefore adopted an audit improvement plan over the period. I think, Chair, I should underscore that certainly there are no quick fixes, but certainly the commitment remains. Chair, if the members would bear with me, I just want to spend one or two slides on a quite busy, sort of quite a technical subject. On the technical financial reporting requirements, and really at a high level, the NSFAS fairly proactively retained the services of a technical service provider to do what we refer to as the gap analysis to understand the implications of compliance to these technical financial reporting standards. Now, this analysis highlighted quite a few shortcomings which we needed to comply with as far as financial reporting for the financial year is concerned. More specifically, amongst these are new technical financial reporting standards, such as the International Accounting Standard IAS 39 on financial instruments, as well as GRAC 9 on revenue for exchange transactions. I think we've just disappeared. There we go. Now, on the issue of IAS 39, Chair, The actual technical standard requires that the NSFAS does a comparative discounting from a valuation perspective on the initial recognition and measurement of the actual instrument using the current subsidized interest rate as well as a market comparable interest rate to discount the cash flows over the period of the borrowings. The difficulty with both of these two is, firstly, we are arguing that there is no discernible or observable market comparative for these financial instruments, or no readily available one, firstly. And secondly, given that this is an income contingent loan scheme, effectively what that means is that repayments are on the basis of income with little relevance to the outstanding balance. In other words, so a student, once they exit, they will pay on a scale of between 3% and 8% of their gross income above 30,000 per annum. So that the term is undefined. Accordingly, Chair, we submit that because thereof there is no discernible amortizing profile as you would have in a ordinary similar fixed type of loan agreement. These provide for challenges in terms of the modalities in applying these technical financial reporting standards, Chair. Management's recommendation, of course, was given these factors, we felt that the transactional face value of the loan would be more appropriate in determining fair value for financial reporting purposes. This, of course, is where the disagreement between ourselves and the Auditor General of South Africa have manifested. Another compounding factor, Chair, is really the historical practice at the NSFAS to have always recognized interest income in the balance sheet and an income statement only when the student starts initiating repayments. So that we've never on our balance sheet had accrued interest of student debtors while they are still studying. Of course, this represents a departure from GRAP 9. Morning. Because it impacts on the existing agreements. This is a matter that we are engaging because the original intention was never to capitalize the interest on the student loans while the student is still studying. It is, Chairperson, a modality that we now need to engage with ourselves and look at the current interest accrual policy. It is under review, and the expectation is to take a policy position to the board for adoption. There was an impairment and provision for doubtful debts exercise that was undertaken by management, and it was for the purposes of financial reporting, fully within the limitations of the current operational systems. I should add, Chair, that the NSFAS remains committed to the recovery of all loan funding, and that really in saying that, I think one must not misconstrue the exercise of impairment. Recovery of all loan funding remains something we are committed to. Just moving on to the limitations as far as the data management system at a very high level, and it's not an exhaustive list. Historically, again, the NSFAS have always applied repayments collectively to the outstanding balance which comprises the interest and the capital combined. Of course, what needs to happen is that the actual repayment needs to be split between capital and interest and applied accordingly. This is a limitation in terms of the system and the process of the past, which we are currently engaging in changing. As part of the management loan book review that has been undertaken earlier this year, various assumptions have been made and estimates from a management perspective. Of course, given that this is the very first time that such an impairment exercise has been done at the NSFAS, there's really no meaningful historical trend data that could support some of those assumptions. It was really just made from a pure acumen and what market and macro indicators gave us at the time. Of course, this is a limitation in terms of the system, and it will require from us to build up some kind of history. Interrogate the data, look at what the default and delinquency rate is, the last given default, etc. Chair, then, of course, the very last point is in terms of factors that have contributed to this disclaimer is clearly the limitation in the skills and capacity within the organization. It's common cause, as you may have seen in the annual report, Chair, that in the past 4 years, the annual awards allocations budget has effectively doubled. And despite this, the system staffing and resources have not kept track. In fact, the team is pretty much the same as it was certainly 3 or so years ago. So the staff complement assembly simply does not have the required skills and proficiencies for the sound management of the current level of the funds under management. Regular and periodic financial reporting reconciliations that irons out some of the modalities in the valuation have simply not been undertaken diligently over the review period.
Can you use the other door? It's a bit disturbing to have people passing in front here. Those should be working, actually. And can I just appeal for less movement, because it's affecting some of our concentration. I'm sitting and people are passing and I'm watching the screen here. Please, can we just appeal with those? Anil, just assist with that. I'm sorry about that, because we're watching it from here, and if people pass here, we can't follow through. Sid, I'm sorry about that.
Chair, then, having spent a bit of time just in terms of highlighting and contextualizing the factors contributing to the disclaimer of opinion, I thought I'd just also spend a bit of time in terms of what are we doing about it? How is the board and management responding to this? Again, not an exhaustive list, just a few high-level key points. Certainly, we've embarked on the whole process of reorganizing the organization. It certainly has taken on the mantle of the dynamics of a medium-sized bank. In fact, Chairperson, if one looks at the size of the loan book at the end of the last balance sheet date, it actually compares quite favorably with some of the micro-lenders listed on the JSE. And in many respects, in fact, our loan book is bigger. As part of our reorganization, Chair, we are consulting with staff because this, of course, is a sensitive matter. It's reorganizing the organization in a manner that would provide optimal service delivery. A skills audit is very much part thereof. We are going through quite an extensive process in securing the kind of skills we require. We just cite a few of them there, Chief Financial Officer, Chief Audit Executive, amongst others. I should say, Chair, we have certainly started in the finance area, and two professionals have already started within that division. And they both are chartered accountants. We embarked on a process to do a data analysis and verification, really to validate the completeness and the accuracy of the actual data, the calculations, etc. There are a number of ICT, information communications technology type interventions that we have started by way of a renewal of our business systems and software. At the same time, Chair, we've also embarked on quite a number of policy interventions. The very first one I've spoken about, the data management policy that underpins some of the modalities of where I think the board would like to take as far as the management of the book, amongst others, and institutional escalation protocols. Really, many times there are varying degrees of compliance as far as the NSFAS manual and procedures manual is concerned. In the awards administration process, and NSFAS very often has to intervene to ensure that there's full compliance. This does impact operationally on the NSFAS and hence delays and frustrates some of the processes, Chairperson. As far as the technical financial reporting modalities is concerned, we've already begun an engagement with the Office of the Accountant General in terms of understanding and clarifying compliance as opposed to concession. The view that we've expressed, Chairperson, during the last audit is that there are certain dynamics that, in our view, is of a unique nature, and therefore there's very little compatibility with other institutions. Chair, I should also say that we have been in contact with our colleagues on the continent, and in truth, the NSS have got a loan scheme that does not compare with any of the schemes on the continent in terms of scale, amongst other things, the income contingent nature. We've looked outside of the continent, and we will continue to do the benchmarking exercise from that perspective. This is part and parcel of unpacking the modalities of our income contingent loan scheme, Chairperson, as well as the Auditor General, obviously. We have commenced with a wholesale review of the awards administration process, both operationally and with the institutions and colleges. The view really there is to see how best we are able to increase and enhance operational efficiencies. One of the interventions that we started during the current year and we will roll out is to bring forward the final date for the submission of claims. For this year, it was the end of it was the 15th of December. Last year, it was in the current calendar year. The idea being is to have the process be a lot smoother and culminate in a earlier close of our systems. Chairperson, there's quite a lot of work going on as far as the replacement of our current legacy system. We are looking at a new and fairly automated integrated system to replace the current loan management system, as you call it. The NSFAS was originally configured and designed as a loan and bursary administration organization, and therefore structurally, as far as data management is concerned, the current platform is quite limited, hence it needs quite considerable renewal. Built into that, we are looking at automated systematic validations together with SARS, Home Affairs, and of course the Higher Education Management Information System. We would like to launch an institutional support team. I'd like to call that a fairly limited support team. It really will be 4 to 5 people of a fairly experienced ilk that we are able to deploy at institutions where there are structural impediments to them being able to process and administer the awards allocation. And the idea really is to support them in a manner for them to be able to support themselves. We are looking at a graduate development program. We have quite a few of our graduate debtors sitting on our book that are unemployed. The idea being is to, at the same time as whilst we are appointing, to build from internally in terms of developing people, offering between 10 and 20 grads every year, a 12-month structured and focused program to begin to start building and developing themselves into the vagaries of student financial aid. We've mentioned the international benchmarking, Chairperson. We have commenced with that already, and quite a few of our current interventions have benefited from some of the learnings coming through that. Chairperson, and then just to spend a little bit of time just on utilization of funds, the performance as far as that is concerned. The unutilized for this review period, ending 31st March, 10 million unused, of course, versus the 37 million in the previous period. Chairperson certainly would like to have a zero unused. Regrettably, some of the structural impediments still remain. I can say that the picture at the end of August of 2010 is materially better. So the total unused for the review period, Chairperson, this is the financial year, is 2% of available funds. Again, utilization of funds. To give you a snapshot in terms of the current financial year, where we are at, we've got 90% received, again 67% on a comparable period. I should also mention, Chair, whilst it's not there, that 90% received versus the 67% also incorporates at least a billion more in actual value, rands processed. Same team, better processes. 80%, 86% processed to date versus the 65% of the prior period. completely revised workflow. Much of this remains fairly manual and paper-based, Jeff, but these are the automated and integrated process that we are referring to, that we are going to be moving towards. We've got fairly strict monitoring, and we've upped our communication with the actual institutions. Jefferson, one of the concerns that still remains is I think we certainly have not done as well as I think we would have liked to as far as disability is concerned. I think that still remains a matter where much more work needs to be done. I would like to just underscore that over the last 4 to so years, certainly the actual rand value spent on disability funding have remained fairly consistent. Also, just to appreciate, whilst there's an allocation for disability funding, when it is unused through the course of the period, we do then reallocate into different other funding programs. So the funding does get taken up, not just within its original intention. There are initiatives that DNSFAS, the department and heads of the Higher Education Disability Association of SA have begun, and we look forward to some of those improvements in terms of guidelines coming through. Chairperson, then again, just to underscore the phenomenal growth that we've seen in the past 4 years. You'll see there the red bar. We've gone from just over 3 billion to just under 8 billion, and that's at the end of December last year. Just as far as the actual numbers are concerned, Chair, for the utilization of funds, I just thought we'd put some of those numbers up there to give you a sense in terms of the different funding programs. The 1% unspent for the review period, as far as DE is concerned, and this includes the recoveries, as well as the other funding programs. The disability there, Chair, I think certainly we'd like to underscore the improvement from the prior year, unspent 61% to 13%, still high, but I think we're certainly moving in the right direction. Similarly, Chair, the other funding programs. Chair, then just a few slides just on our demographics. We really just wanted to bring that through, some of the questions raised in the prior period. Pretty much dominated by females, Jim. And then, of course, further demographics. And this is all staff, Jim. I think we must just point that out. Then, of course, by province. These are student demographics. Certainly quite a concentration in Gauteng. And of course, just by awards. Major fields, Chair, I think you can see that much of that is priority skills, where the lion's share is going, as far as commerce is concerned, and the applied sciences. Chair, then I think we are ready to take questions.
Thank you for the presentation. As I explained, that Honourable Fransman will join us, his other engagement was running late. But just to start opening, firstly, what I want to say from my side is the disappointment that the chairperson of the board is not here. Because ordinarily you would expect the chairperson to be leading in terms of taking accountability of what is happening from the government's governance and management of the institution. And I think the chair is here would reflect on that as well. But secondly, we have a standard norm in terms of how we distribute documents and presentation. Just want to highlight to NSFAS that we are not happy that we did not receive your presentations in time. They were sent to us actually today. this morning. We did not receive this prior, so we could not compare what you are presenting and what is reflected on your report. And I think that the standard ways of how we operate as a portfolio committee, and surely by now you should be used to it, because it's not the first time that you are appearing here. But going into the details, I'm going to get members to reflect on this presentation that has been put through. But I just want to say the concern is around the management and the audit opinion that NSFAS continues to have. It's not the first year. I would understand if it was the first year, and therefore, but I think the continuous issues that are raised by AG around NSFAS management of finances. And I think, CEO, you reflected on the issues around your budgets, but you never explained the expenditures, irregular expenditures and all that, because it's reflected profoundly. I thought when you were explaining the audit opinion, you'd go in details, not only one specific area, because I think the various areas that the AG, the audit opinion has raised, not only on the loans that you tried to explain, but you would have expected that you go in detail in explaining those audit opinions in full detail, each area that has been flagged, so that we clearly understand and are able to engage with that. Maybe before I open for members, if you can just go through all the other areas of audit, because you started with the other one, but you left others. If you can just reflect all of them and explain what happened.
Chairperson, yes, indeed. My humble apologies. The areas that I've raised are all the areas excluding the irregular expenditure, and I will just quickly touch on the irregular expenditure, Chair. Really, the irregular expenditure, it was, of course, tabled in the annual report of 2009. And the issue that was raised here is really the issue that the NSFAS is still awaiting a condonation of that irregular expenditure of the prior year. Now, since then, the board has, in fact, condoned the irregular expenditure, and we've made a submission to the department, who in turn, of course, makes a submission to the National Treasury. And so we are awaiting that condemnation, Chairperson. And the issue highlighted by the AG was really just to say that they have not seen the condemnation coming from the executive authority.
Can I just open from my apologies to the department. I didn't acknowledge the presence of the DG and the other team, the CFO is here. Thank you for coming. My apologies, when I opened, I didn't acknowledge your presence here. Thanks. Just to take question comments from members. Chair, you would want to start? Okay. I'll start with Honorable Makazi, Honorable Vukuza, Honorable Mushwani. Have your hand up? Okay. Sorry? No. The holidays are over. Honorable Lopez Lawrence, Honorable Pander Westhazen, Honorable Khate. He's been gone. He's not been back, so that's why I'm forgetting his name. Honorable Gina, you have your hand up. I can't see properly. Try to back. Okay. Honorable Nelson, you're passing. Honorable Makube, you are at the back. Okay. Maybe you can just move to next. If you are way behind, we might forget you where you are sitting. In that order, members.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Chairperson. Chair, I just want to go back to the point, the concern that we have, the first concern that we have, that NSFAS, they've sent their documents late. And as a result, as members of parliament, we are unable to interrogate, you know. We are going to be unable to interrogate them because of the late of arrival of the documents. And I think, Chair, there's a rule in this parliament where committees, you should receive the reports 2 weeks before the meeting, so that we are able to go through. And it's a pity that I just came late. Otherwise, we should not. not have this meeting with the NSFAS until they send all the documents before time we go through and they make us. So I think we should note that.
Honorable Vukuzo.
Thank you, Chair. First of all, I want to thank NSFAS for the, notwithstanding the, but I would also like to thank NSFAS and for the presentation. There's a sense in me that my heart goes out to you because audit remarks are always historical. So up until you fix some of these things, then they will still come up, you know. So sometimes we slice you into thin pieces of meat, probably for wrongs that were committed historically, but then you are the accounting officer. So I do understand that. Some of the problems that lead to the disclaimer by the AG are quite structural issues. And I don't know if you emphasized that enough, because I thought that you used more a technical explanation for technical problems. Sometimes Parliament, not sometimes, Parliament works around simplicity. The technical problem, the valuation technique is very technical. And since you have not found each other between yourselves and AG, even next year when you come, you're still going to find that thing. Because the whole issue of this whole valuation technique, the discounted amounts, the market value, and the whole thing that gets itself into this model is not working. So I think that one of the things that you must really do is to look at the structural problem. Because even in the next 5 years, we're still going to sit with a similar thing. Because it's not easy. Even if we wished you did it, it's not so easy to think because it's too structural for me. So I'm just saying that I don't know what the conversation is between yourselves and AG, but for as long as we still use the same valuation technique, we're still going to get the same results, which are going to get you into trouble each time you come here. And then I don't want to talk about the unutilized funds because I do see that there is progression towards the positive. Because if you look at unspent the previous years, I can see that a lot of work has happened. However, we cannot help but wish that things were 100%. But we do see that. We also see that the whole issue with the disability really needs, and you have just said that you need to energize that. The last one from me is really the humanities. I didn't see them in the pie. I saw commerce, which is fine. It's discussed skills and so on. By all means, you're not killing humanities. I'm a student of humanities. You're not going to kill them. You are going to fund them. I mean, the minister himself is saying, never mind that he's also a student of humanities, but he's also saying that he does not wish that we can do without humanities. We cannot do without humanities. So I do not believe that you can have a bursary scheme that does not have, or a loan scheme that does not acknowledge humanities. We need social workers, ASAP. There's no way that we cannot have even 5 to 10% that goes to humanities. We need that. Because they appreciate the interaction and interrelationship between individuals, communities, society, and the larger world. You cannot not have such people. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Michelle.
Thank you, Chairperson. I want to start by appreciating respect my colleagues did, the fact that we have given us a report, but also to say it would have been nicer if we would have received it earlier. And then I note that in 2005, if I understand you graph correctly, on page 7, in 2007, we will need to appreciate.
7 of the presentation or the annual report itself? The presentation. Okay, thanks, ma'am.
Do you understand where I am when I say 7? So it's fine if you understand. Thanks. So 2005 and 2007, I note that you did not understand. If I'm, yeah. You spent what you got, every cent of it. But although my colleague here says you are moving towards the right direction, my reading of this is that in 2009, the slide shows that you have done worse than what is happening this year. Unless if I'm not reading this correctly. And the thing is that, that there is need to take a disability very seriously in this country, and you need to do that rather you overspend and come and talk about it. Leaving 61%, I think, is too much unused. And there is an outcry out there. Maybe you don't reach to the rural area. There are people who definitely need this particular amount. Can't sit there and use 61 is a big one. And I see this, the whole question about interest. And it's unfortunate that each time you come and get a report, the amount of interest it appears here. Is this country ever going to move out of this interest? Because it's like the students are given money so that they give you more. They can't get money because they don't have interest. Such that, can we work that the interest becomes very minimal? Because it's like you go and get this money, hey, you're going to be poor for a very long time, trying to pay it back. Thank you.
Honorable Professor Lawrence.
Thank you. I'm going to only ask two, perhaps three questions. I just want to add to a previous question. I'm very concerned about the little money being spent on education. We focus on education, and it's too little. So to add to the previous speaker, she referred to social workers, but what about education? I would like an explanation. And then I would like just to refer to a paragraph in one of our newspapers recently, a ministerial committee that conducted a review of the NSFAS last year found that 316,000 students, almost half of the borrowers, had dropped out of university over the past decade, making it very difficult to recover loans awarded to them. Now, is there any research being done as to why we have so many dropouts and why will funds awarded to these students if they are actually then dropout students? And then I would like an explanation also to the IntelliCard or the swipe card and students squandering their stipends on cigarettes and drugs and alcohol as opposed to food and stationery. Can you give us any explanation to what we read in the newspapers regarding the swipe cards? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, I want to link on to what my colleague has just asked. This morning we only heard about the finances and the organization itself, and we heard very little about those that are supposed to benefit from what I perceive to be the most important scheme for our country's development and the development of our youth. And I want to ask, if I could link on to, for example, my colleague Kloppers Lorenz's question, for example, the money being made available for prospective teachers. We had systems in the past in this country where principals and teachers would recommend certain learners for those types of bursaries. They know those learners best. They know what potential, they know their, quite often, their circumstances at home and who are the most deserving of their learners. Yet it seems to me and I must say it's a single case that I personally know of, that there is no screening in that regard anymore. Is that true? And can't you bring in partners in the form of schools and the staff of schools to ensure that we get the right people to benefit from this scheme? Then secondly, I see also you say you've got an audit improvement plan, but you haven't expanded on or you haven't shared with us the details of that plan. And my question to you, sir, are you going to be here next year and with a clean audit? Or are there still outstanding issues between you and the Auditor General? If so, what are those? Then also, I won't dwell on the
unutilized funds. Some of my colleagues have raised that already. But then also, there are a number of things that concern me. For example, the fact that your doubtful debts dropped from 1.7 billion in 1 year to 174 million. I'm referring to page 8 of your annual report. Please, can you explain to us, because I don't see that massive writing off of outstanding debts, but on the other hand, we've all just received these documents this morning. And then lastly, I feel uncomfortable with the way in which Nisfas is handling its finances. If I read things such as an amount of 1.4 million being paid wrongly to CETA and then having to reclaim that money again, if that is the standard of accounting control that you have, how can we expect good accounting control when we're talking about possibly hundreds of thousands of students? Please, if you could just put us to rest and say no, the necessary controls are in place. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Khadim.
Thank you, Chair. Sincere apologies for arriving late. I'm still recovering from my flu. well, Chair, maybe one proposal that I'll want to put forward is that maybe the NSFAS should come back soon, so that, you know, as members be able to have enough time to peruse through the annual report, because honestly, we wouldn't be doing justice if we let this thing go. If they will continue with giving us report late, we should be able to look measures of strengthening our discipline. But okay, maybe the other question that I wanted to ask, Honorable Mushwana has just put it forward, on to say, I also wanted to check in terms of the interest that you are putting forward for the students, and to say when do the students start paying the interest? Because, you know, most of the challenges that comes with the challenge that you can be able to retrieve all your debts in time, it's because of too much interest, and because of maybe the time frame and the explanation that you also give to those who manage to receive those loans. The other question that I want to get an understanding, your intervention in terms of the ITC, you know, the recent study tells us that most of these parastatals and government institutions install these IT systems that is more or less outdated. My question to you is that, you know, want to also check, because we must be able to see the impact of this IT system. It mustn't just give all the automatic reports and stuff, but it must be compatible in terms of the international standards and also the valid value of money. Because one department has spent, I think, about, 24 million, you know, installing an IT system that they realize within 6 months that this system will be outdated in the next financial year. And you have to procure another one that you'll be able to, you know, it's a very fruitless expenditure, according to my understanding. So you must be able to give me sort of an explanation to say, when do you anticipate that this system will last you, so that you don't find yourself next financial year, you come to us and say, hey, our IT system is already outdated, you need to update it there and there, and in order for us to work properly. Because if that's going to be the impact, it's going to very compromise issues of value for money. Lastly, I want to, you know, I was expecting you to give me, you know, I've asked this question, I think, in the last of your presentation, because I wanted to get, you know, a clarification clearly in terms of your statistic, in terms of your staff representation, because I must be able to understand the levels so that you see the difference. Because if the levels are not clarified, generalizing, say, oh, this is the word, and this is the word, this is going to create a certain aspect of level whereby one will have a misunderstanding. That's why in some of the processes, you'll think that it's many females, but in a reality, it's many males in top positions. You know, you must give a little bit of clarity in terms of that. I think, Chair, that those are all my questions. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Makubela.
Thanks, Chair. I was a bit relaxed thinking you're still proceeding to Honorable Nelson. but it's fine. Just a few from me. Recently, we witnessed situations where students in various universities would be leading protest actions and so on. The one that comes to mind almost immediately being the University of Western Cape over issue of funds. And each one of these institutions will be pointing a finger at another. That is NFL's, the university leadership, and so on and so on. And as I am saying, we witnessed that in various institutions. And you may need to come clear who is at fault. Is it you allocating these funds late, and so on? In the previous year, for instance, it used to happen wherein money would be allocated late, even to universities, only to find that the targeted cohort of students has passed the institution already. Money meant for the current students comes late after they've actually exited the institution. And perhaps you need to explain what happens to their debt. Because if they were to benefit, and because of some fault, either between yourselves and the institutions, they happen to be victims. And there's no way in which the system corrects that. So perhaps you've got something to tell in that particular regard. The other, it's with regard to the fraud prevention plan that you have developed, apparently for some year now, or more than that, which is not being implemented. Perhaps the excuse is that the board needed to approve it. And it can take a year for the board to approve something as serious as all that, unless somebody is delaying the approval. You know, I don't want to say that, but it may be a deliberate move. Otherwise, it should be something that is within your understanding, that that should be implemented with immediate effect, including the risk management strategy. The second issue is NSFAS able within its system. I've seen you talking the automated system there, but currently, what are you able to do? For instance, the throughput in terms of these two, or let me say it rather, in the previous years or so, you will find a high drop rate. Are we able to track that ourselves, to saying we used to have this number of students that have since dropped out, and what were the actual reasons? Because if you fund them and they can't necessarily complete, it should be worrying to you. You can't just fund people who drop out, they don't necessarily complete, and it's just business as usual. You just continue to fund those who come to the picture later on. It should be that we must be able to look at that and say, this is what we should be able to do. You see, we are already spending a lot of money funding through the Funza Lushaka scheme. you will find that you have taken in about 7,000 of those. The next thing, the success rate is at 1,000. A lot of those are not, that have not completed, even if they did not necessarily drop out. But it just tells that you are putting money where you don't necessarily get the value. You know, and I'm saying NSF cannot just continue in that kind of a direction. The other, just to share with us, that the, I'm not saying it's a problem for you to write off the interest or whatever is owed to you. It may be a good thing. But we need to understand the principles within which that was based. Are you able to share with us here as to what was that involving the write-off? So that it's a precedent that we should know how we take it forward. We don't do it at one point. We are not ready to do it at another point. Because even our reasoning at the point that we took that decision was not too well informed. I think we should be able to do that. The last one, Chair, I hope I've not taken much of your time, would relate to the FET sector. Surely, we're not doing much in that regard. And I think the reason that we don't have enough money, money is never enough in the world. It's never enough. That reasoning is understandable. But I'm saying, at the level of the country or government, we want to move quite a number of our youth to go to the college sector. Because we're saying these institutions should be institutions of choice. People should not find it wrong to receive their education or their skills from colleges. It shouldn't be that everybody would go to university. But as we do that, it should go along with the kind of funding models that we have got. But if we'll not be funding that sector in the main, it will mean that we are even killing the sector. Because the majority of the people who want to access that education at that level will be those who can't fund their own education. You know, there's a problem even now as we speak, where some learners will want to pursue their studies within the mainstream schools. But if they happen to move out or shift to FET, they move from a no-fee school, and all of a sudden, in the FET, they're expected to pay 18,000, and they don't have that much. And they don't get necessarily funded for that. So I'm saying, I think we need to do quite a lot in that regard to ensure that we don't move about issuing the message that people must approach FET colleges. And when they go there, they can't be assisted in terms of funding and so on. It will be a bit of a problem. I think you will share with us as to what becomes your proactive move in that regard. Thanks.
Thank you. I noticed that Honorable Gina wanted to say something. I'll keep Honorable Gina and then we'll take another round. Let's rather take them. Honorable Gina.
Thank you, Chairperson. My first question is on slide on the demographics per province. The picture that is shown there, if I can get an explanation, is it, does that demographics reflect the number of students per province where they live, or it's per the institution, as to say, since Gauteng has got a lot to this, because there are so many institutions around Gauteng, or is it awarded to students from that particular province as it reflects there? If I can get the clarity, because if not, I will say, in some of the provinces where I think the poverty is striking very, very high, but when you look at the demographics, that is where you get the minimal reflection as per the awards that has been made, if I can get the clarity. Number two, Chairperson, last year there was a program with NFAS around the whole Ishofi building where they were operating on. I'm not sure whether they've correct, whether they've got another building or they are still squeezed there, because I will not say it's not reflected. I haven't gone through the whole document, but I thought that was one of the things that they were going to report on, because really it was an issue last year in their reports. I'll be glad if I can hear what's the progress, where are they right now, where are they operating. looking like they will still squeeze as they were last year. Lastly, Chairperson, well, I'll be very short because most of the speakers have spoken to the whole issue of the disability fund. I just want to get a clarity as to say, since there is so much that is not utilized under the disability fund, is it because, let me not say is it because, how well are you advocating that to people to know that there is a separate fund for disability, for disabled people, because it might happen that most of them, they just apply generally to the whole fund of NSFAS, and then they don't get to know that there is this separate funding, because I still believe that is a very vulnerable group, and there are so many people that are in need. As to say, how well do you advertise yourself as to say this is known, that there is a separate fund like this? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. I'm going to just give NSFAS, I don't know if you want to say something, and give NSFAS to respond. But there are two things from my side. Just to try, I tried to track. Last time when NSFAS was with us, we spoke about your outreach program. I'm battling to find it. Where did it drop? Where did it fall out? Because when we were talking at that time, we were raising concerns that you are, for example, targeting 3 rural schools. But at this point in time, there's literally nothing. You're silent. Completely, it has fallen somewhere along the process. Remember that time it was Ms. Fumayo who was presenting, and we raised the concern to say, in your outreach, go and try and reach out rural communities. But there were specific recommendations that were made by this portfolio committee, which I could not pick up anywhere in the process of the report and even in your presentation. But again, page 45 of your annual report, in the section 6, you are speaking about improving the competency and efficiency of higher education institution staff in financial aid offices. This was also one of the highlights of our last year interaction, where you raised concerns to say that part of the problem is that money is not able to flow through to students is because of the capacity in the institutions, the people who are dealing with NSFAS. But I'm looking at your accounting here that you did not even have, you're saying one reason for variance, or all internal audit reports were received for the 2008 academic year. One day meeting were held with UJ, UNISA, Zululand, and Forte in the second quarter. But looking at what was the main cause of this, I don't understand why you abandoned this. Because the reason was that you wanted to improve efficiency, you wanted to improve the functioning and distribution of this fund. But now I note that you did not, and you reduced from your two-day interaction to one day. I'm not so sure what's happening here. Because this was a commitment you also made as NSFAS to this committee, that you go and interact with institutions and improve the functioning of those offices, your financial aid officers in institutions. And a number of institutions were not covered. I mean, 4 institutions in the entire country, but just a drop in an ocean in trying improving the efficiency level of those institutions. Just tell us what happened, because I think these were 2 strong views from the committee when we interacted with you last time. And I feel that somehow NSFAS has not taken the recommendation from the committee. She wanted to say something.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. Can I, understanding this, questions being posed, can we also ask the responses to be also at the level of a strategic perspective, understanding the current strategic challenges in the context of that report and how and progress. Now I'm going to give a few examples in it. One is I'm hearing the question about the disclaimer in the context of interest and so on and so on. Is there a coherence between the ages, in a sense, analysis on that, and the review principles that has come about in terms of its policy thought. So if we implement tomorrow the review process, in the future then, would that be an automatic divergence or a coherence with what the AG's perspective is when you look at financial compliance on this matter. You understand what I'm asking you? That's the one issue. So let's get the direct response, but then let's also get the bigger strategic question and understand that. Meaning, is the policy directives through the review and the minister and even parliamentary position on this writing up of state interest, etc., is it cohering with the AG's positioning or is there a divergence? And does that lead automatically to form of disclaimers? That's one. The second issue would be around what is the makeup of that unutilized funds. And it's I think the members have spoken to the matter about from 37 to 10. I remember the last time Scarce Skills was a serious unutilized funding envelope. Is that continuing, even if there was positive impacts on that? I think the third issue, in what I've picked up, is possibly an underappreciation on the what the chairperson of this committee just now said relating to rural areas, rural provinces, and outreach. And that brings me to the last recommendations of this committee in the context of the annual report. What mechanisms are being followed? So you come here, that report goes to Parliament. Am I right, my secretary? That's right. We then adopt that report there. It goes back to the Department of Higher Education and Training, and it goes back to NSFAS. So there is a document with recommendations, very clear recommendations. What is the mechanism that was used after you receive that document from Parliament in its application on the implementation on the new strat plan, which is this one that we are in, and the progress to date? You hear what I'm asking? What? You don't. There's a report. There's a document in Parliament. We present that document. There's long discussions. We've got NSFAS here. So there is an analysis made, and this members takes a decision that then goes to Parliament and it's been tabled at Parliament. The Speaker will write a letter, if I'm right, that's the normal process. The Speaker will write a letter and say to NSFAS, we've looked at, the Parliament has looked at this matter, this is the findings out of your last annual report. And then that will, the recommendations go there. From that moment when it lands at the institutions, it can be NSFAS, it can be CHE, it doesn't really matter which one, right? From that point, do you actually take into account the reports and what did you do in the of the last findings that this committee made vis-a-vis NSFAS? How did you, in fact, take our recommendations forward? I'm using the bigger issue, but the example is being pulled from what the chairperson of the committee says around there was a decision of this committee about community outreach in terms of rural areas and expansion to the rural provinces. In fact, there was in fact a recommendation much deeper into that in that issue, which I'm not going to raise now. And how did you then take it forward? That's the issue. Differently put, are we sitting here, are we getting presentations from entities, and it's a nice interaction, and guess what, the next time that we engage, we ask the similar questions. That's the issue. How serious are we taking this committee's recommendations when you leave here and when there's a formal report coming to you? That's the uncoded question here. The last issue on this would be around the actual dropout rate, the actual figures. And I think one of my members, Makubele, raised that question around, one, the bursary fund, I think for teachers, but the actual dropout rate and what was the interventions that was made to reduce that dropout rate. Now, the contradiction is, NSFAS will say we are just a disbursement. Is that still that position of the funds? or did you in fact reposition yourself in the last financial year or up till now to in fact make sure that it's money well spent? And what is the actual dropouts per category?
Thank you very much, Chairperson of the committee. I'll hand over to Ernest first to start with the response. See you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, I'll go in the order and hopefully I'll underscore the questions. Just a correction. Certainly we regret having a late submission of our presentation, but certainly our annual report, Chair, was submitted on time for the members to apply their minds. I think the very first issue that was raised is the whole question of the structural nature of the disclaimer. Very much so, Chair. At a strategic level, there is the issue around interest, and I will unpack that shortly. But really fundamentally what it is a difference of interpretation of the modalities of the NSFAS. And it's a conversion of, my version at least, of how we understand those two. The point of engaging the OAG was to certainly have the opportunity, which had never before been taken, to table the issues, engage and articulate on the dynamics. It's never been done before. And it's not new issues, Chairperson. It's issues that have been at the NSFAS for as long as I think it's been around. So really, that is what it is. And if I should use a tangible, practical example, the Office of the AG, respectfully, argues that NSFAS's loan agreements are similar to commercial loan agreements. We've taken an opposite view. We believe there are no commercial institutions, certainly in this country, that provides income contingent loans with no terms, fixed terms of repayment. We remain open to be convinced or persuaded otherwise, but we are doing the research in support of our view. So that's the structural nature of it, and therefore it talks to the modalities of then how you treat it from a financial reporting perspective. Coming from the very same profession, Chair, I've made a point that the standards, and again respectfully, have been written almost in a one-size-fits-all, and that some discernment is at times required. It's an ongoing conversation, and it's done in a manner that, you know, is most appreciated, and we really are seeking guidance and support. And so we'll continue that engagement to find the solution before, of course, we get into the next audit cycle. There are some very positive support coming from the Office of the OAG, but of course it is the call of the Auditor General, the final call of the Auditor General to make, and we have to respect that. Chair, then on the question of the issue of the interest, if I can just unpack that. The current interest that the NSFAS is charging is 80% of the repurchase rate. So the repurchase rate currently is 6%. So 80% thereof is what we charge. It's quite a heavily subsidized rate, if I can put it that way. Up to this point, the policy position of the NSFAS is that interest commences on the 1st of April in the year that the award, the loan is advanced. We've begun to engage the board to say we need to rethink that issue strategically. Our current systems does not accommodate the application of the in duplum principle that basically says that the interest that you accrue on any debt has to be kept to the outstanding capital at a point in time. So the system does not accommodate that. So that there needs to be an intervention. So we have to do those things. So this is a consideration that the board has taken quite seriously, and we've had various discussions on it. I'm convinced, Jay, that we currently have a policy position that I think the board would be comfortable with, and that would support the social intentions of the student financial aid. But I think the board needs to have the opportunity to apply their mind and formally adopt a position that we would hope the executive authority would also support in sitting to this committee. Chair, on the issue that was raised on the spend on education, I think certainly I would be very supportive, Chair, that we're really just sort of scraping the surface, and it certainly is not sufficient. But we're also mindful of the various other imperatives in our country, and that we certainly are also competing with the NHIs and all the other social policy interventions. So hence, my focus has always been, and I've made the point in the annual report, that we need to better spend the little that we do have. There was a question about the 316,000 that dropped out, and the questions as to why and what are we doing about it. Chair, I fully support the view that something must be done, because it also speaks to our deficiency of our spend. The question of what does the NSF have to do? The recent review report has made a recommendation, which we are still waiting to be final, as the chairperson knows, to rewrite the actual NSFAS Act. One of the positions that I've argued very strongly for is increasing and continued interventions where the NSFAS could support service providers or institutions that in fact provide the academic and other kinds of social support for students, because it really does not make financial sense for us to be spending blindly and then for that to be ending up as a dropout rate. So I'm fully supportive that there's an opportunity for the NSFAS to engage in some of those interventions. And we have begun to do that, Chairperson. Chair, the question was asked about the card systems and some of the abuse of students buying alcohol with their cards, and I think some of the service providers were used. I must unequivocally say, Chair, that the NSFAS is not involved in any service provider that provides card-based payments or card-based transactional systems, simply because we have not begun that process as yet. So institutions then, by their very own independent autonomy, engages with service providers that does not always provide the optimal service. The NSFAS, of course, provides some guidance to the institutions, but I think at the end of the day, really it is their discretion to pursue. Some of the institutions have come to us about some of the difficulties. The recent flare-ups that we may have seen in the public domain is because the institution has called those service providers to account, which have stopped, of course, the process of the abuse. Chairperson, there was the issue raised of the teachers and whether there's any screening coming into the system. We've got the Funza Lushaka bursary scheme. Now, essentially there are two criteria for NSFAS funding. The one, of course, is academic admission. The other one is financial need, as is determined by the financial means test. Now, if a student has met those two criteria, then they would qualify. But qualification is no guarantee. If there's enough funding at an institution for 3,000 students and you are 3,004, then that's the reality of where we are at. Chair, the issue was raised around whether there will be another qualified audit next year. Chair, now, we've had a disclaimer for the current year, and being again from the profession myself, if you have a disclaimer in the prior period, it is likely that you will have a qualification in the next period, because the AG would audit both the current year and the comparative. Of course, a qualification is one step up from a disclaimer. So it really is the AG's discretion as to which way they go. Of course, we are going to do our level best in terms of ensuring that all these points have been properly articulated and properly unpacked and argued, and to seek some kind of consensus, Chair. There are very positive discussions we are having with the Accounting Standards Board as well in terms of interpretation and application of some of these technical standards, and we are hoping to make progress as far as that is concerned. we have engaged the AG to request them to come and do an interim audit for the end of next month to provide us with, and the team, as well as the new people that we've appointed, with an opportunity to get more organized and get battle ready for the year end for next year. And so that process will continue, Chair. There was a question about the drop in the percentage for the doubtful debts in the current year. If you look at the income statement, there's a 2.6 billion expense item, which was the impairment of the book. So that would have been a reversal against the prior period provision. So therefore, the actual book's gross value has dropped quite substantially. And because it's dropped quite substantially, what remains is fairly, what is viewed as fairly recoverable debt, and therefore the need for a lower percentage as a provision is then undertaken, Chair. Chair, the issue of the management of our finances and the CETA 1.4 million, certainly a matter that was of great concern to both the board and the audit committee. It was unfortunate that last year, during the review period, that an amount was paid up front for a service to be provided by CETA, which we've in fact received as the full refund prior to the close of the financial year. Chair, I think we've addressed the issue of the interest policy. The question was raised on the issue of the IT systems and whether this will last us and whether it will meet the requirements of the NSFAS. Chair, what the NSFAS has started 18 months ago, they started with a service provider who's gone through quite an extensive process in understanding how we do what we do to try to design a system that will in fact meet our requirements, certainly for the next foreseeable future. Building into that some of the strategic imperatives that was introduced by the review report to at the very least double if not triple our awards administration. What has informed that process that is about to culminate in the presentation to NSFAS management in the next month or two of the affirmed design concept which precedes the commencement of development, and development of that system will take 18 months, Chairperson. What is informed of that is all of the interventions we are talking about, the issue of the online and direct validations, the issue of splitting the interest and the capital, the issue of interface and integration of our enterprise resource management system, as well as the debtors database. All these factors, Chair, has been spoken into, and hence it has taken as long as it has. Chair, we note the question of the member of the demographics of the staff at the various levels of seniority, and certainly we could make that available. We had hoped that was what we had presented was in fact what was requested, but certainly that could be made available. Chair, the issue was raised about the upheavals at, for instance, UWC, and the Honourable Member asked about who wants to blame, whether it's NSFAS, of course, or the institution. Chair, I have engaged directly at institutions at the VC level for us to have a very clear understanding in terms of some of the challenges that some of these institutions face so that we don't have the public spats. Every year, an institution would know well in advance. For instance, for 2011, the institutions would know between now and the beginning of December exactly what their allocations are. So before students set foot on the campus, the institution would know exactly what their allocation is so that they cannot award more than their allocation as far as the NSFAS funding is concerned. So this is a fairly entrenched protocol and communication, Chair. The Honourable Member has raised the issues around the fraud prevention plans and where we are now and why it's taken as long. I couldn't agree more, Chair. Certainly we've gone through quite an extensive process, and it is regrettable that we weren't able to have a formally adopted fraud prevention plan, amongst other things, at balance sheet date. of student dropouts. Are we tracking these, and can we continue along this way? I think I've spoken earlier about some of the interventions I think that are necessary in terms of supporting these students. The NSFAS is not meaningfully tracking these numbers, other than, of course, on our database as far as NSFAS funded students. And I think it's a concern. It's a concern that we need to engage and do more on. The issue was raised about the interest accrued write-off and how this was informed. Chair, I couldn't underscore sufficiently that when we present impairment and provision for the purposes of financial reporting, it is not to be construed with a write-off as in the sense of forgiving an obligation to a student. There's a modality that speaks to how you report financially, and there's an operational modality in terms of recovery. I think we made the point very clear, Chair, that the NSFAS remains fully committed to the recovery of all funding, fully cognizant of some of the macro factors and economic hardships. Chairperson, and then the question was raised on the FET funds. To my understanding, Chair, all FET funding is bursaries, so it's not loan funding. Is what we are providing enough? I would argue quite likely not, Chair. And again, this would be a policy matter where the NSFAS receives the allocation from National Treasury through the Department of Higher Education and Training. Of course, we would articulate that this is what the need is, and of course it becomes a case of the size of the cake and, you know, your share thereof. So there was the issue raised of the demographics per province. It is my understanding that that would be at an institution level, so that you would have a number of students in a province per our diagram, but it would not be on the basis of where the student actually comes from. We do not currently track that, and perhaps we ought to see how we should be able to do that and certainly provide that to this committee. The question of the building space was raised, and grateful to the Honourable Member for raising the question. The NSFAS has in fact leased at least 1,200 square metres, fortunately within walking distance of our current building. And we have our entire ward administration as well as our finance function that has moved in there. It's a completely renovated office space that very comfortably accommodates those teams. There's no longer boxes sitting all over the place, and I extend the invitation to members of the portfolio committee to, you know, kindly come and pay us a visit when they do have time. We certainly like to take you, show you the new building. The plan, Chairperson, that we've communicated to the executive authority is that we wouldn't need a new building, and all that we've done was really just bide our time to find an appropriate building that houses everyone under the same roof. I anticipate that we will be able to do that within the next 18 months, Chairperson, to find the right space. Chair, the issue of disability funding and how we are marketing this, I would, again, Chair, be the first one to say that at this balance sheet date, I suspect we probably have not done enough and could potentially do more. What I would want to do is I would want to just ask my colleague, Ms. Bonnie Falcon, to maybe just expand further. But before she does that, I'd also like her to just touch on the outreach program. Where are we now, and institutions, what we have done?
Good morning to everybody. In terms of the disability funding, what's really been done today is much more in terms of relationship building with various organizations and with the universities, speaking to the disability units. And where possible, in terms of media usage, we've also included some information. I think there's probably an argument to be made for saying that there's much more of a one-to-one intervention required with funding for students with disabilities, and we perhaps not, NSFAS is not ideally set up for that ourselves. So we do have to work with disability units and with the universities and with organizations for disabled people in order to assist with that. But it is certainly something on that has been on the radar screen for the last few months, and much more so than it was in the past. And so I'm confident that next year we'll be able to come here with a far better picture as regards the funding for students with disabilities. In terms of the question about the outreach, firstly, do need to say that I don't think that people here are actually aware of the document that that you referred to, Ms. Fransman, in terms of the recommendations that were coming through. I certainly left last year's presentation with certain impressions in my mind about what the portfolio committee was looking for, and very much the focus on the rural student. So I think we probably just need to engage going forward about where the document ended up, and if it in fact reached the right place. We don't know about it, as far as I'm aware. But having said that,
you mean which documents are you talking about? The report from Parliament. So you're saying that as NSFAS you've not received the report from Parliament in terms of the recommendations of the committee, that's what you say?
As far as I'm aware, and I think we kind of whispered here, and it didn't seem as if anybody was actually aware about it.
Okay. But my question was not on the report.
Yes, now
the
I said.
Issue of outreach was discussed in the committee of NSFAS.
Yes, and certainly what we took out of that was very much the focus, the need for the focus on rural areas and increasing the expansion there. What we have looked at very extensively is the use of vernacular radio in order to reach areas. We obviously simply don't have the resources to send individual people out all over the place. The feedback we have from that is that we have made fairly significant increases in the knowledge about the funding that's available through that. It went hand in hand with the implementation of an incoming SMS line, so that people could actually communicate with us in the cheapest form possible. It's much cheaper, obviously, to send an SMS than to make a phone call. Some people gave us, in the key performance indicators presented in the annual report, you will see that in the period of 4 months in the last financial, in this financial year, where we launched that SMS line, we had about 80,000 incoming SMSs, which means that we were directly communicating with 80,000 more people than we did manage to do before. Many of those, because of use of vernacular language, many of those people are rural people. And what we've done in terms of responding to those SMSs is a range of things. We've, depending on the nature of the query, we have responded via SMS. We've also brought in a number of temp staff members to handle telephone calls, outbound phone calls to people, which is obviously prize number one, because you can actually have a full-on conversation, and many of those calls have been made in people's home languages as well. We tested the knowledge levels of incoming students at universities, and it went up significantly from the previous year, which we attributing to in large part to that radio campaign. And we are also extending, we spoke about our NGO partnership base, which we have had running for a few years in terms of reaching rural communities, and the need for expansion and changing of that partnership, the model, shall I say, changing the model. One of the things we have started looking at and working on is not only looking at an NGO base for the partnership model, so for example, working with youth desks at mayor's offices and municipalities, local municipalities, etc., again, in order to reach rural areas. So we definitely, since the last time we met, have reached a lot more rural people than we had in the past.
The issue is not about what we have done. The issue as well was about your accounting. But in the last financial year, you had it as a target. You had it in the report, and it's not here in terms of your strat plan, in terms of accounting purposes. That's one. But just to come, there's an issue which I'm really perplexed to say, that in all the years NSFAS has interacted with Parliament, are you saying to us that you've never received a report feedback? As to, because quite on, then it goes to the ministry and the department. Because what happens is that in all our engagement, in everything that we do, there are reports that we are producing as a portfolio committee with recommendations to the department for implementation. And sitting here, Chair, next to me, I'm seriously worried. It means that all those reports that we've been producing are just sitting somewhere, nothing is being done about them. And I'm throwing this back to you as chair of the committee now. Because quite honestly, it's unacceptable. I mean, if the committee makes a, there's enough of reports that we've produced, and my understanding is that the processes, they go back to the department.
Can we ask a very direct question to Ines first? Are you saying that after you met us, not the, what you've picked up in the discussions in the last annual report engagement, you didn't get a report of our recommendations and findings? That's what I'm getting you are saying.
Okay. That's exactly what we said.
That's one. Secondly, I'm looking at the department representatives. You are saying in this committee meeting that you did not receive, as a department, the report of the annual processing of last year vis-a-vis NSFAS.
I can confirm that we have not received
it. And if you, now, can I ask you now a question? You are, at what level are you again? Acting Deputy Director General, right? So you are saying you didn't get it, or did you say the DD's office didn't receive it?
Chair, as far as we know, there's not such a report that came to the department. It's never been submitted to either the CFO's office or any of the DDGs that I'm aware of.
Did the CEO of SACWA receive our findings, our recommendations from this committee when we last saw you vis-a-vis annual report and today?
Chair, we've never received a report like that from the portfolio committee or from Parliament.
Thank you. Can I ask the department, did you ever receive from this committee via Parliament anything on SACWA in terms of the last reports that we've dealt with in the last financial year?
No, Chair.
Okay. Can we then ask that we investigate this matter? Because where I'm sitting, I am extremely clear what is the process normally. But I'm going to look at the secretary of this committee that is in Parliament, not in my office, not in the WIP's office, not in any political party's office, but is the secretary to committee for Parliament. I know the answer, but it is in fact, unless CHE, you've had a different experience before I come to the secretary.
Yeah, well, I was not, as you know, CEO last year, but I've not seen anything in the historical documentation to suggest that.
Thank you. Now, can we ask the secretary of this committee, after we make our analysis, it goes into a report that goes into the parliamentary process, what technically happens from there? Because this is serious.
Yes, thank you. Normally, it is published in the ATC, then it's forwarded actually in the office of the Speaker. That's when then it's...
And then from there, where does it go to?
Normally to the department.
So I'm saying, that's what I'm saying, we know what is the, what that response will be. The question is Parliament recommendations taken seriously by the Department of Higher Education and Training, insofar they then further take and execute it to the various entities that report to the department? That's the question. What I'm hearing from senior managers of the department, they've never seen and never received the reports from Parliament. That's what I've just said. Now, I know that is not true. In fact, I want to put it as bad as that. Differently put, I'm saying, it definitely, the mechanism exists of how it's supposed to get to, and it wouldn't just be a failure of the speaker's office or some manager, etc., because there is an automatic technical process agreed between departments and Parliament in terms of how this happens. So I'm suggesting that this is serious. We have to investigate the actual process
of what happened after our last secretary, out of our last report, and how it has gone. In fact, I've seen some of the letters that were CC'd to me. It wasn't directed to me. It was CC'd to me via the from the speaker's office. It was sent to the department, and it was CC'd to me. So I've seen some of that, right, in the last couple of, in fact, definitely in the beginning of this year until now. So I'm going to ask all formal processes to be assessed by the secretary. They will have to go to the speaker's office, actually look at how that process has happened, when it went into the ATC, what is the technical, and that we need to get a report from Parliament on this matter. And then the department will have to come back to us, whoever was at fault, whether it is somebody in the speaker's office, somebody in the in Parliament, etc. Because we've tabled the ATC. It's not an issue of it was not tabled. We know it was tabled, right? We know the recommendations. We know, in fact, the final recommendations that this committee has made, Chairperson. So let's then ask for an urgent assessment on this matter, and let's get a report to the next week's committee meeting via the secretary and even via the speaker's office on this particular matter.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think what worries me, I'll come to you, Divisa. I don't want us to go, but Chair, I think we've really elaborated. But I think what you have outlined as a process is quite important. That we go back, check what happened, where it happened, and would have to take steps from there. Because why I raised this matter, there were a number of issues, quite tangible recommendations that were made to NSFAS, and that report contained those recommendations. Hence, I made specific references even to that. And unfortunately, NSFAS has not received them. That's one part of it. But where I would want to take again, Chair, from where I'm sitting, is that we engaged NSFAS. Besides the report, Chair, I note your process of the report. I note what we need to do with the report. There were issues that we raised as portfolio committee in our engagement with NSFAS, which I had hoped that at that time you come back, those things would have improved beyond the report. The report is formalization of our opinion and all that. Like now, we're starting with the report, we'll produce the report again, we'll put it in ATC, we'll make sure that this time we'll follow, make sure that people get it. So that, because we're avoiding the issue of reputation, we raise issues with you, the following year we continue and raise the same issues. There's no improvement in things. That's one. But if you are in this position where you interact with us, there are certain things that we raise about issues that we want to see improving, our recommendations. Obviously, we expect that they be improved. And noting that when we say the department is quite broad, could end up in the DG's office, it could be in the ministry. I'm looking at the parliamentary office of the minister is here, which also would look into whether it went to her, it went to the DG's office, or it went wherever it went, we'll have to check on that. I know on other committees as well, Chair, that you get the reports going through, and as chairpersons of the committees, you get copied to say, this has gone, this is when it has gone, we are able to track the dates. Even further correspondence, when it comes from the ministry to parliament, the chairpersons will be copied. But I think that let's leave the issue at that point, noting that we do not have much time, Chair. We have three presentations that we must still, two more that we must still engage on. And noting that the two institutions that we are going to interact with do not have our last year's report as well, but hopefully they noted some of the issues that we have raised previously to cover that. I just wanted to check with NSFAS if you've been able to respond to all the issues that you were requested to respond to, so that we are able to shape a way forward, Chair, in terms of that. Obviously noting the unhappiness of because it a bit discourages to sit here and you talk and you realize that people literally there isn't anything done about our discussions and our recommendations, but I think we'd have to find a way of dealing with that. But just to check with NSFAS, in terms of responding to all the questions, have you responded to all the questions?
Chair, there's just one last one, hopefully, that I'd like to hand over to my colleague, Ms. Fiona Lewis, just on the issue of page 45 of the annual report, matter that was raised there.
Thank you very much, Committee. In respect of
the capacity of the HEIs in terms of the administration of the NSFAF funding, in the annual reports, we report on the fact that all the audit reports were received for the 2008 year and that, in fact, only 4 visits to institutions were held. These were one-day meetings that were held with institutions where we had picked up the greatest need for intervention. The agenda, if you read through the variants on that particular report, the agendas of assess those days were managed to get through the key issues raised in those one-day meetings, which is why, in fact, we didn't have 2-day meetings. I think important to also understand is that NSFAF, at the end of March 2010, which was this financial year, had tried a number of new strategies to communicate with and work through issues with institutions, amongst which were workshops at institutions, workshops at our FABS and NSFAF conference, and these are all detailed in that quarterly, in that annual report, that in fact it wasn't just the institution visits which were held, but that there were 3 sets of workshops directly with institutions on issues that were raised. We have taken this seriously, looking into the 2010 academic year, and part of the intention this year is to also do a roadshow with the vice chancellors and the management teams of these institutions where these issues have been raised, and that has already begun.
There was an issue on humanities that has not been responded to.
I just want to go back to that actual graph. Yeah, that's in terms of value awarded by a major field. So it would be incorporated into arts. Education, of course, is also there. And humanities and law.
Sorry about that. I'm a bit disturbed. I'm trying to manage time with the presentations that I have. So we're trying to work out some way of having some sort of an agreement with some of the presentation that we need to take. Maybe just to give 2 minutes to rounding up. Any other follow-up questions from the questions that we asked? Honorable Gina has a hand. Honorable Makazi has a hand. Chair, through you as well, one thing with NSFAS. I just checked with the secretary. We did not receive any written apology of their board chair. So, a representative of the board.
Will be followed up, Chair. We'll
just, I'm still on the floor. Will I just conclude what I'm saying? Which I think through you, Chair, would have to express ourselves as the committee. It's not appropriate. I just wanted to raise it here. I'm cornering you today with the powers. I'm trying to be a whip as well as share your session. So I don't want to delegate my other duties. So in the process of chairing the session, I'm also reminded of my responsibilities that we do not have anything that sort of gives us an indication of as written as per the request, because it's the chairperson of the board ordinarily who has to account to Parliament. That's the leading person of a delegation normally. So in this case, it's not happening. These are anomalies that we must start fixing. Maybe just to give over to you.
But I can't understand why you're so accommodative then, Chairperson. Because we are sitting here in a situation where, one, we received the strategic presentation based on the detailed documents that we received. It came late, and we understand that the document arrived early enough. But, as you know, normally in presentations form, you are lifting up some of the strategic issues. I think that's one. Secondly, we are hearing here and that whatever we discuss in this committee and recommend in this committee are not necessarily, it's accidentally being taken forward and not in a strategic way, because picking the stuff up that members say in the committee meeting and what we actually deliberate via a document is two separate matters. Because then we have contemplated and we actually then put certain strategic findings in. And you are saying that that is not there. So and then thirdly, the point being raised around the absence of the leadership of the board. I think what we must say is that we do not accept whatever. We're not going to, it's no use of actually getting a report now on whether Chairperson is here or not here. So my suggestion would be that we would not be able to table this report unless we, at the end, get to the three or four strategic issues to be dealt with, that then we'll have to come back, meaning NSFAS, we'll have to come back here in the context of the stuff that has been raised, but even in the context of the recommendations that we've made last year, when it then is being submitted into the parliamentary process, not next year, now. So we're going to hear out, and then at the end we're going to have to make a particular recommendation.
Honorable Vukuza, you had something, and then Honorable Nkana. No, it's not. Oh, it's Honorable Kina, and then Makas. Okay, Honorable Kina. Well, you do the last one. Please, 2 minutes each.
I'm also a little bit worried on the manner that the report has been tabled, as to the discourse that we have from the last year's report and this year's report. I will just try to highlight one area which I wanted to ask, but I waited for the response because it was already posed between I came up around the whole issue of food protection policy and plan. When you look at the report for the last year's, on the last year's annual report, everything there was completed, as per the report that is in front of me of 2009. But coming back to what is happening today, it's where it is said we are still in the draft stages, it still needs to be recommendations. I mean to say, Chairperson, maybe really as we need to be very careful when we write these reports, because we do refer to what has been presented to us previously. As to what is in front of me now, really, it makes me doubt the whole report, as to say, should we go back and sit and compare everything that is happening, because you cannot come here and report that you have completed, it's in the implementation plate. This year you are coming on the same issue, so it is still on the draft stage, it is still going to be what is it that you said? It's still on draft stages. It's still going to receive whatever recommendations that it still be. So I just wanted to rise up with that point, your person, as to say, really, can we be content in the report that we have, so that we have a clear understanding of what is happening around NSFAS? Because there are so many grey areas where we need to sit down and ask. I don't know how are you going to correct that, but really, these two reports does not talk to each other, and maybe I believe there are so many other areas that we haven't got time to sit down and look at them. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Makas.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to ask a question around the does NSFAS have internal problems? Or do you have problems between the board and the management? Do you have those problems? And secondly, Chair, I think as a committee and the department, because I would say this, because this is a portfolio committee meeting. If you look at what it has been presented here and listen to the process that we have outlined, how should this annual report, the stages and the phases that they should have gone through, it's clear that also the department, they have a weakness of not doing the oversight to the entities. And it's something that, as the committee, we need to look at also to do our oversight to the department. Because if I can ask the question, what has been reported here? Did the minister approve it? Does the minister know this information? I don't know, Chair, but I'm just asking. So, the NSF board, I think they should take the issue of accountability very seriously, because that board, it accounts to the parliament. And the parliament is the highest body or the highest house of this country where they, you know, they account to. So therefore, Chairperson, that's why, you know, I said in the beginning, it is unfortunate that I came late. I would have not listened to the first presentation. I would have sent them back and come with people who account in this parliament, that is the board, through the management. Because if we allow entities, they come here and they know their boards, and their boards, they are being appointed according to the legislation. They are not taking us seriously. That means they undermine the parliament, not portfolio committee. They undermine the parliament. And I think, Chair, this thing, it should not happen again.
Another more question, 2 minutes.
Yeah, or less. Okay, the first, remember earlier I asked an issue about the money to be recovered and so on. Just to get a sense of how efficient is your recovery plan. You see, there's money that will never recover. For instance, we talk dropout rate. You may find there's a lot of money that will never recover, which you can as well write off. Although you're saying in your own statement, and I've even seen some paragraph here, you're saying you're still committed to recovering all the outstanding money. But if a student entered the system and went out, you will never recover that 1 minute. Because that person will never perhaps even work anyway. You no longer have any information about that person. And I may have interest to understanding how much of that outstanding debt constitutes that. You may find that we're talking a lot of money, and in your own view, you're still thinking that you'll recover that money, which will never, it will never be possible in my own view. And even if you do not have any policy directive as to whether you can write or not, you definitely will need to reach that stage. Because otherwise, you can't live in that situation thinking that the money will be recovered at some point. The last point, which we raised even elsewhere, maybe a policy directive which is lacking as well. Almost all institutions, universities, or institutions of higher learning, have introduced the bridging courses for almost all the courses in them. That which used to be a 3 or 4 year course has all of a sudden become a 4 or 5 year course. And NSF does not fund the bridging course. And to me, that constitutes another problem, that a student has to survive for a year without any assistance in order to start a real course thereafter. You're taking that particular
I think in a nutshell, CEO, I think we'll come to the closing, but what Honorable Makubele is raising is quite fundamental. You're sitting with a challenge. You're noting that you have some issues around your funding and not being able to. But the issue that there is unspent money when we continue to have crisis of students who are not included in terms of their financial, who are deserving and not getting the support. I mean, there are several cases that I have received and dealt with. And when we went back to the institutions, they were funded. Not that they did not qualify, but somehow they were excluded in the process, which is a serious, serious problem. Hence my question earlier on, in terms of efficiencies of your offices, because last time that's what you gave us to say. It's not necessarily your making that you end up with this unspent money, but it's because of these offices. But now instead of dealing with the offices, you've not dealt with them. There's 1 day workshop that we were supposed to have, we eventually went end up with a meeting and with few institutions. But necessarily that, in the process of you being reviewed, we understand the reviewal process of the minister, the challenge with the budget or the money in terms of the loans. but management issues that we're supposed to deal with don't reflect progress from where we are sitting as the portfolio committee in terms of your accountability. But there are a number of issues that I think even relates to the department, which I'm going to give to the DDG to respond to, the issue of oversight of the department to the institution itself, which from where we are sitting, the view is that there isn't enough oversight that is being done. So you'd have to reflect on that. I'll give firstly to the CEO to respond to some few areas that has been raised, and also to the DDG and the CFO to look at the issue of the department's response to the issues raised. And then I'll allow the chair to close on the presentation.
Thank you, Chairperson. The very first issue that was raised, Chair, is the issue around the policies and they're still in draft and you know, what the progress is there. Chair, when I started on the 1st of Feb of this year, one of the first things that I requested was, in fact, a policy dashboard that effectively lists all policies in the various stages that, that they are in, whether they are existing and how far it is, in order for us to begin as a management methodology to track the progress and inform the decision making. Another thing that I've also requested was for the issue of the policy dashboard to become a standing item on the board's agenda to drive this this process. Some of the policies are quite technical, Chairperson, and therefore we had to retain the services of a service provider to provide some input in terms of the technicalities thereof. But certainly the concern is noted. Regrettably, on the 31st of March, the balance sheet date, that was the scenario. I can, Chair, report that at this point, quite considerable progress has been made in that respect on many fronts on as far as policies is concerned. The board has equally shared that concern and is also driving that process very hard. Chair, the question was raised whether there are problems between management and the board, and I can unequivocally say that the board is quite supportive, Chair, and management equally is quite supportive. And I'm not aware of any problems of any nature between management and the board. Having said that, Chairperson, I think I would have underscored certainly in my first presentation at this committee is that given that the NSFAS is an organization in transformation, it's not an easy process, Chair, purely because we are going through quite considerable change. And you have an organization that sort of started out as a 2025 team, NSFAS Section 21, at the very least about a decade ago, that was handling somewhere in the order of 700 to 800 million in annual awards to an organization today that's handling well over 3 billion, and an organization that sits at least at 100 people and will be expected to grow even more to, at the very least, 150. So these are not the easiest of times, Chair, in terms of that dynamic. But we are sensitive. We are sensitive and we are managing the change from that perspective. Chair, the issue was raised of the whole question of the loans to be recovered and how we are going through that process. We have to have a coherent debt recovery strategy as opposed to the ad hoc, I think, that we certainly have seen in the past. And it really speaks to the kind of skill and acumen that needs to be brought into the organization from a data management perspective. Those modalities are the issues that we are currently crafting. Of course, we are aware that when somebody drops out, that their employability would be limited. And that speaks to the nature of the loan scheme being income contingent, so that you are only contractually obliged to start paying when you are one employed, and when you're employed, when you earn above the 30,000 rand per annum threshold. Prior to that, there's no contractual obligation for us to expect any repayment to commence. Of course, if a debtor wants to start early, we certainly would encourage that. But there won't be any coercion or duress as far as expectation contractually is concerned. We have to, as part of our Enabling Act, Chairperson, that very clearly spells out the mandate of the NSFAS is to recover loan funding. So we therefore need to do that, Chair. Chair, then the last two issues that was raised was the whole question of the bridging course. Of course, the policy position for the NSFAS is to fund a first qualification at a public higher institution. Regrettably, bridging courses or second qualifications falls outside of that scope. And the truth of the matter is, Chair, the funds for first qualification is already limited. So that if we are going to expand that net, it just means we are going to be able to help fewer. And again, Chair, this is at a policy level, and certainly that there will be some engagement on that. Chair, the last issue that was raised is the whole issue of unspent monies, and I'm pleased the Chair acknowledges that certainly there are some issues around the institutions. Are we going to proceed and progress going forward on this, Chair? I think I have mentioned in terms of one of our operational interventions was the limited institutional support team, the between 4 or 5 professionals, experienced individuals, that would be deployed at institutions where the concerns are greatest in terms of prioritizing. It is precisely for this point, Chair, where we are aware of systemic and structural issues at the institution that retards the processing of applications, where we are going to go and intervene and ensure that we are on track in terms of the processing. Actually, I certainly wouldn't want to give the impression that we would want to assume the responsibility of the institution. It is the reason why I'm also engaging at Vice Chancellor level to sensitize the senior management about some of the issues at the coalface, so to speak. It is amongst the interventions that we are going to engage in to ensure that our 1% becomes the 0% share. Jefferson, thank you very much. And certainly we note the comments about the absence of the chair. The chair was invited and the chair has regrettably explained and indicated that he wasn't able to make it today. And I certainly will take responsibility for not having put through the in writing apology, Chair. Certainly will be forthcoming.
Can I ask you to switch off your mic?
In terms of oversight of the department, we are firstly represented on all three of our public entities' boards, and by virtue of that, the minister appoints officials from the department to be on the boards as well to perform the oversight function. We also represented on the executive committees, and in the case of NSFAS particularly, we are on the finance and audit committee and EXCO and board, represented also by the branch as well as by the CFO's office. In terms of our oversight of NSFAS, this is through the analysis of the strategic plans of the entities which are submitted to us and which are analyzed jointly with the Office of the CEO for the approval by the Minister. The operational plans, the budgets, etc., all are submitted through to the department. We have a process of quarterly review. The quarterly review is a mechanism for ensuring that things are going according to plan, and these are subjected to close scrutiny both by the CFO's office as well as within the branch, and any areas of concern will be raised with the relevant entity in order for clarification to be sought. With the annual report, we have been in receipt of the annual report. We have been in discussion quite intensely with NSFAS regarding the disclaimer. We've been working quite closely with the internal audit and going through the checklist of items that the CEO referred to. We have been working very, very closely, almost on a weekly basis, where we've been in discussion with the entity concerned.
Thank you, Mama. CFO, do you want to say anything?
Okay, perhaps just to add that in addition to what was reported already, that
from our side at the office of the CFO, we also have meetings with the account, Auditor General to clarify some of the audit reports and also to get clarity on the issues raised by the Auditor General and whether it's required from the department side to follow up on specific issues with some of the entities. But furthermore, I think the information provided by Ms. Meehan is correct.
Thank you very much. I note Mr. Sima is out. Chair, you want to say something before we close on this matter?
I think that Mr. Sima will be back. I think, Acting Chairperson, we take into account progress made on certain financial systems and compliance issues and those things. And clearly, Mr. Sima was saying that we take into account certain system enhancements when it comes to financial compliance. So we're taking that into account. What still bothers me, I'm not so sure if that's supposed to be happen or if we actually should commend this first for that. Isn't that part of the normal process, right? Supposed to be. If it was received from a low base, that's a different issue. Secondly, I would suggest that I'm not so sure if we can actually table this annual report in Parliament, and I'll raise those issues. Why? You see, I'm concerned that the education system in South Africa is essentially a slaughtering house for students and a slaughtering house for our children. That's what I'm and the problem is that every time we are hearing from education specialists and educators, we are hearing drop out. Now, we are hearing the same song for the last couple of years, and guess what? We're actually becoming part of the system in that. It becomes fine. So we put another strategy together, we put another strat plan together, but there's no interventions, no radical interventions. We accepted that 58% of our children has dropped out between grade 1 and grade 12, and guess what? We accept it as Parliament. We accept it as society. How can we accept it? We accepted that after grade 12 in post-school, that the strat plan, not of this structure, but of the department, didn't have, in fact, clear targets for reduction on the dropouts. We accept that. Yes, so we're hearing there's going to be another plan at play, and therefore it's fine. But there's no radical intervention of the issue. So it's process, it's plan, and it's all that. My advice would be, is it 43% or 45% of NSFAS students that's the dropout figure? What is it? Or failure figure? Roughly.
Between 43 and 45%, there's not a lot of difference in terms of the actual percentage. And I think, you know, if you measure in a point in time, which is always a difficulty, that figure changes. We measure our dropout rate based on graduate and dropout statistics annually. That's based on a year and a half old data. And that does change. And with the ministerial
review, what is it? What's your variance?
Well, I mean, at any point in time, we're going between 36 and 40%.
Yeah.
Is the variance.
That is your if you are very generous, it seems to me, in terms of your interpretation of how you look at it.
But remember, this is purely on students on loan.
Yeah, I'm speaking, yeah.
And it's purely on a factor of when we pick them up as having dropped out of the system, and we're measuring it relative to those who are still studying and those that have graduated. So when we look at those three sets of figures, our comparative indicator of dropout is related to those that are still in the system and those that have graduated. It's not a factor of the actual dropout itself. It's a relative indicator, which is difficult to pin our dropout figure and relate it directly to the department's dropout figure.
However you want to interpret it, it is high. Okay. So it's high for a while already, right? And we are hearing there is a process, and I think the question around oversight of a department into NSFAS. The question is if people are sitting at the executive management level or if they are sitting at the board level, what is the actual input when terms of the question around oversight. It's therefore not the presence. It's therefore not drawing up another strat plan, because that's what we are very good in South Africa. We can put up strat plans. We could put targets, etc. We can do all of that. But the reality is we are sitting with this type of dropout. So my advice would be that we, that in terms of this annual report, that we in fact consider, and the committee will consider it, that we do not accept that next year we'll get it right. That we do not accept that, okay, it was just a mistake, that there was just the recommendations made were not communicated via the department to yourself. So that we in fact say, let's halt. Let's park this issue, because January comes and there is a problem. So Chairperson, Acting Chair, would want to suggest that we do in fact consider in-house the question of should we actually table the report as we table it and we look at recommendations, or should we in fact say there is a serious problem in terms of the mechanisms that we utilize to in fact get right certain things. That's the one. The second one on oversight. That the department will have to give us an indication of the process flow of the oversight. I think it's Honourable Member McGuzzi that asked the question of oversight and accountability. I think that was the word that we've used. In the context of implementation on targets and agreed steps, right? So that's the second one. And then the issue of, I think the dropout question is obviously a very critical issue. So I'm not so sure if at the end we'll accept a recommendation, depending on what the committee will say, that we'll just take it and table it without, and just raise a concern, or table it and raise a crisis, and then get that crisis rather to trigger the whole department and NSFAS into a, in fact, intervention mode. That is what we'll still have to decide, but for now I would rest it at that.
Thank you very much, Chair. I'd like to take this opportunity to thank the NSFAS team. Obviously, you'd have to look at our recommendation based on whether we support this annual report as a committee or not, because within this few days, 2 days from now, would obviously raise an opinion as the committee around this. And the report should be tabled within the next week or two to Parliament directly. So I think that's the way to where we are from. I think, firstly, one of the things that sort of even make your case even more weaker is the non-existence of your board members, because if the chairperson was not able to come, he could have delegated anyone else within the board, and which did not happen. So that is part of the problems that we would have as the committee, because the issue of governance from the level of the board, we've got to hear from the board in terms of how they oversight the whole institution. So I think the committee will have an opportunity to reflect on this. Without your presence, without the presence of the department, then would issue an opinion around this matter, the accounting of NSFAS. But to take this opportunity, thank you for being here, Mr. Simon, with your team. Thank you, and we'll move straight to SAQA. I think I'll hand over to the chair of the committee. You didn't announce any time break. 1 minute then.
Whilst they are setting up, I think we can just have your 1 minute.
Utilizing my last opportunity of being a set. Thank you.